Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's Friday.
It's Friday.
Thank God it's Friday.
Time for another edition of the Reardon Roundtable.
Friday.
Now, Mark Reardon on St. Louis's News Radio, KMOX.
Welcome to a Reardon Roundtable, the first Reardon Roundtable in the fall season as we wrapped up summer. And I'm glad we're here today because we do have baseball in about an hour. I'm going to join the Cardinals Radio Network, and the Brewers and the Cardinals are going to play. And I feel a lot better panel about this weekend after last night. That was a solid victory. Let me introduce the panel as we get going because we have a ton of topics to cover. This is one of those, and maybe this is the way it always is these days. We could probably go a couple of hours. Jane is back with us. Ms. Duker, how are you?
I am doing pretty good. How are you? I'm notorious JED.
Yes. No, I'm doing okay. Again, I'm glad that we have the opportunity to chat about a bunch of these things this afternoon. Gene Evans is the executive director for the Missouri Republican Party. Hey, Gene, how are you?
Fantastic. Great to be here.
And Jeff Rainford, former chief of staff for Mayor Slay. Hello, Jeff. How are you doing?
He was
having some Zoom. You know, I think he's going to sign back in. Yeah, Jane, let me start with you. I want to start on the Supreme Court stuff. We'll get to the nomination process and what's going to happen with the Republicans. But let's focus on RBG. You know, I love her story. I have a lot of respect for her. I always loved the fact when I found out that Antonin Scalia and her were friends that deeply loved each other. I think that speaks volumes as well. So you lose a Supreme Court justice here that, you know, made a lot of impact on the court for a variety of reasons.
Yeah, and I also think that even though, okay, the left-leaning ones, you know, we like our sort of left-leaning judges, she was more of an icon. She wasn't just your typical Supreme Court judge, I think, for a lot of people. And so I think that's why, you know, you're seeing so much fervor about her. Not only did she have a great story, and she was very smart and just she just was sort of an emissary for a lot of things that people believe. And I think her passing at this time is, you know, call it 2020. Anything that can happen will. And so it's sad. I mean, she was, and I didn't agree with everything that she ever said. And there are some positions that she took that were very controversial. Like, for example, like Title IX, she believed that accused students should have due process. And that was against all what, you know, all the liberals were saying. She wasn't always, you know, straight line. She really was a thoughtful, brilliant woman. And I too loved the fact that her and Scalia were good friends. I did not agree with Antonin Scalia on a lot of things, but he was one of the most brilliant jurists that we've ever had. And I think the two of them hanging out says a lot because I think they were both of a caliber that you want on the Supreme Court.
And Gene, you know, Jane said something there that was maybe the tone of some of the texts a week ago when the news came out is, man, can this year get even more bizarre and weird and sad and all these things, right?
Most brilliant jurist.
It's been quite a year. And, you know, I think RBG is an icon. I mean, I'm an athlete. She had something to do with the original Title IX. She had so many decisions back before she was even on the Supreme Court that were impactful for women. And she is an icon. And I think that their relationship, I think there is more of that than we know about. It's nice that that was in the spotlight, because I can tell you, as someone who spent a lot of time in the Capitol and still does, some of my closest friends, whether they're in politics or out of politics, are very far to the left. I mean, I have several good friends who embrace socialism. They're Bernie bros. They're still my friends, even though I'm obviously not of that political belief. We need more of that.
I agree. And Jeff, I know you had to disconnect just briefly. We were just starting before we get to the process of replacing RBG, the just her history and legacy. Jump in on that.
Yeah, so she was a revolutionary who did things in a non-revolutionary manner. I mean, she really changed the way that women and men work together in the workplace and under the law. But she didn't burn anything down to do it. She didn't, make a protest vote and elect the worst president in the history of the United States to make a point. As a matter of fact, her first few cases, as I remember, her first few cases, she actually was representing men to make the point that all people are created equal and are should be treated equally under the Constitution. So she had a really big role in revolutionizing America, particularly women's role in our country. But she did it in a really unrevolutionary way. And, I really admire her for what she did, and I admire her for how she did it.
All right, so Gene, this is going to cut. Hang on, because we got to make sure we got to get through all this stuff. Gene, this is going to cut both ways, I promise you. But, and I've asked Senator Hawley and Senator Blunt this week, it's a presidential election year. Didn't you and other Republicans and people like me say we should not move forward with a Supreme Court nomination during a presidential election year and we're just a few weeks off?
Are you insinuating that there is hypocrisy in politics, Mark? Because that would be shocking to all of us on the panel as well as your listeners. Listen, the difference now is that you have a president and a Senate who are of the same party. What you had with Merrick Garland, you didn't have that. There's no way, if the Democrats had this opportunity, that they wouldn't move forward with their pick. And there's no way that the Republicans are going to miss an opportunity to replace someone who is more of a liberal jurist with someone who we can perceive as a constitutionalist.
So, Jane, I'll flip it around on you, because I remember we had these conversations on the roundtable in 2016, and you insisted that was abhorrent, that, Mitch McConnell would not move forward with the nomination for Merrick Garland. Mm-hmm. You have to be thrilled that now they're going back to the way that you approve of, right?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, look, am I
Well, I'm just saying, come on, it cuts both ways.
Well, no, but the problem is, you can't turn around and say, oh, no, we can't. We are going to do this. I mean, look, the hypocrisy is everywhere. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I think of how ridiculous and hypocritical it is. It's going to happen. And we need to just move on with the fact that this is going to happen. And, you watch, you'll see the Republicans whine because the Democrats will do everything in their power to stop the appointment. And they'll be shocked, I tell you, shocked that the Democrats would do what they're legally allowed to do and put up every roadblock that they're allowed to.
Okay,
they will
all
be
right.
Appalled. The turtle will turn.
But no, actually, I think we'll be thrilled about that, because Rainford here, I want you to talk about some of the politics of this and how it relates to the election from this standpoint. I've looked at a little polling this week and the effect that this might have. Now it's early, what the replacement, the nomination could have on the election. It seems kind of moot at this point in some of these states. However, there is some theory, and I think a lot of people turned, including me, on the Kavanaugh hearings and the way that that went down and got very angry. And if there is some of that nonsense again with a female appointee to the court in the next couple of weeks, that's a distraction that I don't think the Democrats need. Now, I'd love your opinion on this, because it could overshadow what Uncle Joe's going to do. Maybe that's a good thing. I don't know. What do you think?
Well, first of all, this race has not changed much in the last year. It's really settled in and hardened. And so it's hard to imagine that, as far as the margin of how much on Election Day Biden's going to be ahead. And by the way, just because he's ahead on Election Day doesn't mean he's going to win. But I don't see how this moves the polls between now and Election Day, when all of the other craziness in our country that's happened in the last year really hasn't changed the polls. From a human nature standpoint, you know, maybe this is wishful thinking, but it seems like it would somewhat benefit the Democrats. Generally speaking, people are much more motivated by being angry than they are motivated by being satisfied. And if the right gets their Supreme Court justice and Trump has kind of done his thing, I don't see how they come out in droves to thank him. On the other hand, you can imagine the left being really wound up and upset.
And yeah, I think there's something to that as well. I really do.
And I think there are plenty of people who want a Supreme Court justice but don't like Donald Trump. And I think that it will actually, I think, what, you know, you're going to solve a problem. And then, I think Republicans will turn on. I think it will definitely energize the Democrats. When they shove this down the Democrats' throat, and they will, they'll not only will they probably hurt Trump, they're going to hurt their chances of keeping the Senate.
And I got some good polling numbers on some of these states right now, and some of this is tightening, and I don't disagree with what you guys are saying as far as the effect that it might have. And most concerning, I think, and we'll get Gene to chime in and everyone else in a couple of minutes, is some of the numbers with seniors in Ohio in particular, which is a state that you have to win. If you don't win that, you ain't going to win the White House in all likelihood. And that was deemed safe for Republicans not too long ago. 2:15, back with more of the Roundtable in a moment.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX.
Welcome back. 2:19. We have Jane Duker, Gene Evans, the executive director of the Missouri Republican Party, and Jeff Rainford all on the panel. A couple of numbers. I want to talk a little bit about the election here. We'll sort of piggyback on the Supreme Court nomination process and maybe the effect that it might have on the election. But also, I think that there are some things that are happening out there where you see a tightening of the race in some areas. I mean, Florida, there was some surprising updates on Florida or some polling information on Florida this week. But I saw some information. I was actually trying to pull up. My computer's a mess here. Some specific information on Ohio, but I saw some polling in Ohio, and Gene, I'll start with you on this, that showed the numbers on the president with men and women 65 and older was extremely troubling, to the point where that's, you know, and he's got to have that group to win Ohio. So there's time, there's no doubt, and there are things that can happen. We know something could happen along the lines of what happened a week ago. We have no idea, but those should be troubling numbers if you're hoping to get the president reelected. Would you not agree?
Yeah, but I can tell you from the calls I'm on, nobody's really worried about Ohio. So I'm not sure who they're sampling, and some of the polls that are out there, you try to look deeper in to see who they're sampling. But I know we feel really good about Ohio and Florida. Both of those seem to be, I don't want to say in the bank, but they're definitely trending towards Trump.
And in the flip side is, Jeff, is that Biden is up 3.6 percentage points in average in the battleground states, but that's the same number Hillary was at 4 years ago. And there are three national polls, non-Rasmussen, all right after sort of a bad news cycle for Trump, that have Biden under 50%, leading, of course, by over 50 points. But is that, you know, if you get under 50 percentage points, is that danger zone?
Well, I don't think Biden's in the danger zone, but listen, I think that we Democrats got to fight for every vote and make sure our messaging is strong. Anybody who lays down today and says it's over doesn't know what they're talking about. Nobody really knows what's going to happen on Election Day, and we need to fight it out. My personal opinion is, polling aside, undecideds, I think, are going to look at this and decide, okay, who's more dangerous? You know, is it Joe Biden or the president? And the president feeds into the narrative that he's more dangerous. First of all, he wants everybody to think that Joe Biden is dangerous, and he calls him Sleepy Joe, right? So even his making fun of him is off message. And then second of all, he threatens in his own Donald Trump kind of way. He sort of suggests that maybe he's going to do a coup d'etat if he loses. Now, we all know that he won't, but it comes across as being scary. So if Donald Trump is trying to appear to be less scary than Joe Biden, I think he's doing a poor job of it.
Jane.
Yeah, I think I agree with Jeff. I mean, look, we learned 4 years ago. I mean, the polls say one thing, but Democrats have to keep it together, and they have to keep it together by staying on message, by doing the right thing. Trump will do his nonsense, and, you know, he does more to hurt himself than anything the Democrats can do to him. And so, polls are great, but, you know, we'll see when Election Day comes out. And I think, you know, you can never 2020, anyone who says they know what's going to happen in 2020 is full of noise. That's what I think.
Yeah, they don't know. And Gene, I want to get Jeff and Jane's answer on this, but look, I think that this debate coming up could be pretty important. There's the potential for it to be very important. But you know that the Republicans and the president have taken the position, and there's something to this legitimately, that, you know, Uncle Joe has some cognitive issues and they don't know how he's going to perform. But can't you say that Republicans, including the president himself, have reduced debate expectations for Biden so much that it's pretty much impossible for him to not exceed them?
Yeah, all he has to do is stay conscious, basically. So I wish we would just let him kind of speak for himself. I mean, I watched his town hall on CNN, Joe Biden's, and I thought he had that he did terrible. But just the fact that he was somewhat coherent, he got rave reviews. So I think when you talk about undecideds, I think there are very few undecideds in terms of they don't know whom they're going to vote for. I think you have people who they're either going to vote for Trump or not, or Biden or not. So if Biden performs poorly in the debate, people may just stay home. They're not necessarily going to switch to Trump, but they're going to stay home. And that's what we want. We want them to go, I can't vote for this guy for president, and just stay home, which is what a lot of them did with regard to Hillary. So that's, and we do have more energy around our candidate, but there's also energy against our candidate. So it kind of goes both ways.
Yeah. All right, Jeff, you're gonna not tell me, though. Yeah, you're not gonna tell me that the Democrats are not nervous a little bit about the performance.
Well, he's not going to win. Joe Biden's not going to win or lose based on how he does it. I mean, if you have a 1960s situation with Richard Nixon against Kennedy, where Richard Nixon had the 5 o'clock shadow and was sweating, it does something like that, and Kennedy looked great, maybe it changes things. But again, what I said earlier, the polling has just, we've gone through all kinds of craziness, including we've had rioting and fires. We've had COVID. We've had the president say crazy things, and the race doesn't change a lot. It's possible that if one of them totally flops, it could change the race. I don't see that happening. And I'm pretty sure that if the president wins the debate the next day, he'll change the subject like he always does to something else. So I don't see it as being as decisive as the Washington insiders and the pundits on both sides, conservative and liberal, see it. I think people are still living their lives, and especially undecided people generally don't really tune in to the news and these sorts of things. I don't see it. I'm not that worried about it being that decisive.
Yeah. Well, a lot of times, you know, to his point, Jane, sometimes we put too much emphasis on this, but I think that the Republicans are wondering if Joe Biden does have one of those moments where he doesn't look like he's with it, that could potentially that. And I would say if that happens, that would have an effect on the election.
You have a catastrophic occurrence, right, like Nixon sweating on TV and having a 5 o'clock shadow. If you have a catastrophic occurrence, of course it will change it. If they both hold their own, I don't see it changing. Even if holding their own.
Well, look, and Chris Wallace is going to do a good, I mean, I think Chris Wallace is going to be a good moderator. I think he's going to ask tough questions of both candidates. He's not going to let them off. Yep. So I've seen the topic list. I think that the topics are spot on. So I look forward to it. I mean, look, I will tell you that one thing that I'd like to hear, and I think that the country needs to hear, and this is on the topic list, specifics of how each of these candidates would move forward with COVID and distribution of a vaccine and all these things. I hear the president talk about and the White House talk about Operation Warp Speed, but I want to have some specifics maybe eventually to compare and contrast as well. So I do think that a lot can happen between now and Election Day. We know that. All right, let's talk about the governor. Governor Parson and his wife, Teresa. This is going to probably carry over till the next segment. Jane, I'll start with you. The governor mentioned, obviously, that his wife had COVID. He got tested. They both tested positive, mild symptoms. They're doing okay right now. But obviously, a lot of criticism coming from your side because the governor hasn't worn masks to the Democrats' liking.
Yeah, I mean, look, they're such nice people. I want them to get better. I hope they do. I am so glad that it doesn't seem serious. I mean, and I don't think anybody wants anything bad to happen to the governor or the first lady. And so I think, people are going to pile on the bunny with regard to the mask. And then, Gene's side is going to say, well, this shows they have mild symptoms. This proves the point that this is going to, take its course. So, both sides have something to talk about on that issue. Now, So we're politicizing this whole COVID response thing again. And, you know, which I don't think necessarily moves the ball. I mean, the irony of it is the governor wearing a mask, you know, it isn't what, you know, he's protecting other people when he wears a mask.
Yes,
it's the other people.
I'm glad that you pointed that out because, right, the people that hit me on Twitter about this the other day, Gene, I think you saw this. They didn't really get that. And then I put up a snarky tweet today because the governor of Virginia also has COVID in his wife. And they have a mask mandate and he wears masks. So my tweet said, gosh, you can get this without wearing a mask. Now, look, I'm fully aware of that. That was snark because I think that I think masks are good. I wear a mask. I think people should wear masks, especially in certain situations. I've never not said that. But I think here's where I am. I just had a really close friend of mine send me a text that said, move on from the mask, dude, not worth swimming in that pool. Because my message on Twitter was, and I don't know why this annoys me, I'm just going to tell you that it does, okay? I'm so sick and tired of the people that their first response is, wear a mask, you're not wearing a mask. Just shut up, wear your mask, I'll wear my mask, then shut up and move on. Because there's nothing right now in existence, and there's a lot of things out there that drive me crazy, there's nothing right now that I detest more than the mask preachers. I don't want to say Nazis because I think that I don't like the Hitler thing. I try to avoid that, but it annoys the crap out of me. Yeah, wear a mask. Should wear a mask. But look, that's not the only way that people are getting this thing or spreading it if they don't have a mask. We're not arresting people for not washing their hands, right? Maybe we should.
Ew.
I think the politicization of this is really getting on people's nerves. And the fact that our leaders, whether it's, you know, the governor of Virginia, who's a Democrat, the governor of Missouri is a Republican, they are out doing their jobs. And when you're out in the public, you're more likely to get it. We don't know what the risks are with or without the mask. But if you're out there leading your state and going to work every day, you're more at risk than somebody who can work from home all the time from behind their computer. That's the reality. And so I think we should cut these guys a break and say, hey, you're working your tail off, the people of the state, putting yourself at risk, your family at risk, and just wish them well. I was really disappointed by how quickly some people politicized this, and I think the general public is as well.
All right, hang on. We're going to come back with much more on the Reardon Roundtable this afternoon. We've got to get to the news.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX.
All right, welcome back. Gene Evans, the executive director of the state GOP with us. Also, Jane Duker, Jeff Rainford, former chief of staff for Mayor Slay. I want to talk about Breonna Taylor, and I want to start by saying what happened to her is a terrible, terrible thing, and it shouldn't have happened, okay? But it's also important, I think, for people to understand all the facts, and I don't think most people understand the facts. There are still a lot of questions about what happened leading up to the early morning raid, but there's been so much misreporting, everything from police went to the wrong apartment. They did not. Her name, her address, her social security number, pictures of her apartment were on the warrant, all these things. So I know it's easy, and Jane, I'll start with you. It's very easy emotionally to be outraged by this. I get that. I get the emotion of it, but I also think that people don't understand the law at all, because you can't just make up a statute and charge these officers when there's nothing that allows you to do that under Kentucky law. And there was good reason for police. Now, maybe there were mistakes that were made, but there was good reason for the police in this particular situation to be looking at the other Walker, the Walker boyfriend, the former boyfriend who was arrested, not the one that she was with that shot the gun in her apartment. There was good reason. Breonna Taylor's on audio recordings from jail when Walker was in jail talking about cash drops to the drug house. So it wasn't a mistake. They were surveilling her for a reason, but this has become another big mess in this country.
Well, it's hard because, you know, I get frustrated even to this day when I hear somebody say, you know, Michael Brown was murdered. And we're like, well, no, he wasn't. Like, we have evidence. We have all of those things. It was an unfortunate death. He died at the hands of a police officer, but it wasn't murder. I don't claim to know as much about the Breonna Taylor case as I know about Michael Brown, because I've read all the testimony. I read everything. I read the DOJ report. And so I understand it a lot more. But yeah, you can't make law for one case. I mean, that's always very dangerous, because so now everybody wants to talk about, you know, that we're going to get to second guess everything that a police officer does. and it's not feasible. The bottom line is it wasn't a no-knock warrant. They may have had the ability to do a no-knock, but they didn't do a no-knock. So, I mean, I just want that factually out there. Second of all, when you go into a known drug house and somebody pulls a gun on you, police officers are going to shoot back. Now, whether these officers use the amount of care they should have, there's a criminal standard and there is a civil standard. The city has already determined what the civil standard is, and they've given this family a lot of money because they believe that, from a civil standpoint, this conduct was something that needed to
and I'm,
be.
And by the way, I'm fine with that. And I'm fine with wrongful death suits that can be proven as well.
And for civil, but the idea that, if we're, you know, that it can't just be that we're angry about a death, that we get to prosecute police officers. And so, you know, it's really tough though, because this idea that we're going to second guess every time something like this happens, it's a hard road to go down.
I want to correct one thing, though. It was not, you know, just to be clear, her apartment was not a known drug house. There was some suspicion that there were drugs and cash on the premises. They did not find any. So, again, going back to the applications for the warrants, I say it's fair game for any of this stuff to be on the table. Jeff, I'll let you chime in when it comes to reforms. But, again, the emotion is let's look at the police officers. This I will make a strong case, and maybe you can argue this depending on what information comes out about the warrants, but I've been making a strong case that this case has nothing to do with race. This may be police overreaction or improper police work, but this is not a case that is based on race. And I think the assumption is that it is.
Well, I'm going to stick to the topic of race and say, listen, I guess I do agree that it's fair for white people to say to black people, you need to look at the facts of Breonna Taylor. But I also think it's fair for black people to say to white people, you need to look at the facts of what it's like to be black in America. And it ain't pretty. And the numbers back it up in every walk of life, every aspect of life, whether it's economic, whether it's health, whether it's law enforcement, whether it's housing, whether it's anything. So I'm fine, Mark, if you say to black people, hey, what about this fact and that fact about Breonna Taylor? But I also think it's fair of them to turn back to you and say, we would not be angry about Breonna Taylor if we had the same American experience as white people have the American experience. They wouldn't be in the streets if it was Shangri-La for them. They would not have been in the streets for Michael Brown if the people in Ferguson thought, wow, this is a great community. They made one mistake. This is like the match lighting the tinder.
I understand that. I do understand that. But I think that there's unfortunately what happens is, and this is why we're not making any progress in this. If you use the examples of Mike Brown, who was a poor example of I think, police brutality and reform, when you keep latching on to some of these stories and you get the facts wrong, I don't think that that does a service. There are countless examples of things that are truly horrific. You know, the one thing that, and this is the reason is, I think it's obvious here, the Ahmaud Arbery case in Georgia to me is one of the most outrageous things that I've seen. But that case does not involve police officers. That case involves some rednecks who chase this black guy down.
But Mark, the same thing happened with rural people who voted for Donald Trump. They didn't vote with Donald Trump with their head. They did it because they were angry. It was a protest vote, and that he would stand up to the nonsense that they were angry at. People are not rational when they're mad. And yes, I you know, wish people would be more rational in all sorts of facets of life. But when people get angry, they don't. And the other issue is, I think all of us, white and black, have a stake in making sure that the American experience is available to everyone, whether or not their tactics are tactics we either agree with, or even whether their tactics are stupid or not. It's still, I believe so much in the American experience, but it is out of reach for too many people, particularly African-American people.
All right, Gene, just chime in on this.
But you don't answer.
Well, hang on, Gene. I'm gonna let Gene chime in on this. Gene's always jumping in. We got to take some turns here. We rotate this. Go ahead.
I think the most disturbing thing to me is how complicit most of the media is in feeding a negative or inappropriate or wrong a narrative and stoking the flames of fire. And to see, you know, a truck pull up before the announcement, handing out armor to peaceful protesters. And I think, you know, the media has a responsibility to get this story right, and they have failed. And the same thing has been true with other controversial stories, including Michael Brown. And the fact that they want to feed into this narrative, and it's not helping. We have more violence, and we're not getting, we're dividing people more. And the media needs to be accountable just to tell the truth, not to fix the problems, but to quit feeding this negative narrative.
I completely agree. And I think it's horrific. It is egregious the way that so much of this has come down and been reported. I think it's completely fair to ask as many questions about the police behavior, their actions, what happened with the warrant, all these things. What happened that night's a fair question to ask about what happened to the other witnesses who may have been interviewed. I wish Mr. Cameron, I don't know the status of this, could have released the grand jury testimony, not unlike Bob McCullough. I think that was, well, it was helpful to some of us because we saw some of that testimony, but it is, to me, it's absolute journalistic malpractice where you have news networks that are still repeating the fact that police went to the wrong apartment when that is, couldn't be further from the truth.
The Reardon Roundtable on KMOX.
Let's quickly here on the final segment of the roundtable, Jane Duker, Jeff Rainford, Gene Evans. We'll do kind of a speed round here. I want to go back to COVID, Gene, from this perspective, because, look, there are concerns that older Americans have about the president's response to the coronavirus. We've now exceeded 200,000 people that have died in this country from COVID-19. So there are questions that are being asked from Joe Biden and the other side about the president saying he did a good job on this. Did the president do a good job on this?
I think that it's so easy to Monday morning quarterback this. I think that him shutting down the travel with China early was really impactful. I think they're, you know, looking back, he may not say it out loud, but I think anytime you look back, you think of things maybe you could have handled differently. But mobilizing, you know, whether it's the task force to quickly find a vaccine, shutting down the country when he did to the travel regulations, I think he did a pretty good job. And they were predicting millions of deaths. And I'm not saying 200,000 isn't a lot. It's terrible and it's tragic, but it's not 2 million.
Jeff.
Yeah, Donald Trump does get credit for some things. The economy, I think a majority of people think he's pretty good on the economy, putting people on the Supreme Court. But other than his hardcore supporters, nobody in America thinks that Donald Trump's done even a passable job with the coronavirus. He's been terrible at it. He knows he's been terrible. That's why, by the way, we didn't mention this, but the Supreme Court thing is probably a good thing for him, because at least for a few days, it gets the news off of the coronavirus. Other than his hardcore supporters, we all are seeing it with our own eyes, and he's done a terrible job, and everybody knows it.
Jane, go ahead. Pile on. I think she's muted, which sometimes we try to do to her, but you got to unmute yourself, Jane. Man, it's always good when she does that.
I know, you love it. No, I mean, the idea, yeah, no, he doesn't even, I agree with Jeff. There's not even a passable grade here. And I'm not even talking about the political issues. I'm talking about just straight getting equipment to people, getting, you know, and not downplaying it, knowingly lying to the American people about how bad this was going to be. He was the one that said this was going to be, you know, we have one case and this is going to just magically disappear. He never said, oh, there's going to be 2 million. No, we never should have gotten to this point. And the problem is the idea of contact tracing and all this stuff that we could have done and testing. He was abysmal on getting testing. You know, we could have gotten a better handle on this in the beginning and we chose not to.
We never ran out of ventilators. Everyone said we're not going to have enough ventilators. We never ran out of ventilators. He made sure every state had ventilators.
We ran out of testing. That was completely unacceptable. That was unacceptable.
Yeah, here's what I would say. I think that the president did a horrible job in many areas, and I think that his tone was way wrong for the longest time. I don't really believe in the fights against Dr. Fauci. I know he's been demonized. On the other hand, this notion that, you know, everyone knew at the beginning of March how devastating this was going to be and how would it affect our entire country. Do you really think that at the end of February, was there anyone really suggesting that we shut the entire country down? Because even Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx have said that the advice that they gave early on to the president, he took it every step of the way. So I don't exactly know what people are looking for there. I understand some of the goofy things he said on Twitter and elsewhere. And I think that he could have been a better leader. And I think that the testing, to Jane's point, should have been a real priority. And it still needs to be, because the faster we can do this testing, the faster we can know how active we can be in society with other people. All right, we got to get out here with the Cardinals. Yachty gets his 2,000th hit last night. I've been ready to give up on this team. A week ago, I didn't care if they made the postseason. All of a sudden, kind of care because, look, we want more baseball. Rainford, what's the prognosis for the Cardinales, and will they be playing on Monday afternoon, or will Mark Reardon be playing golf?
Well, oh, my God, that's a tough call because he might be playing golf with me. Flip of the coin, I think they'll be playing. I don't think they go very far in the playoffs. They got some good young players, though. I'm looking forward to a full season next year.
I love the way Dylan Carlson, we all know that he has it in him, but, man, you could see that he's got a little bit more confidence now, Gene, and is starting to light it up. So, you know, you can't rule anything out. I think the bullpen has been looking good, but, man, you've got a little damage to the starting pitchers with Michaelis being out, and Carlos RIP as a starting pitcher, I think we'd say at this point.
Yeah.
Well, it's fun to watch. I mean, watching Yachty was great. I mean, I know we have some good young players, but I'm here for the good old players. I'm here for Yachty, and I'm here for Wainwright. And I did not expect Waino, I'll be honest, I did not expect Waino to have the season that he's having, and really impressive. So you get his leadership and you get his pitching, and it's just, it's fun to watch. And I was fortunate enough to watch that last night. I hope you all got to make that hit.
Yeah, it was great. It was great.
Look on a save, and then they replayed the call from that was in, it was a great experience. Another great Cardinal memory. Too bad we couldn't have fans there, but another great Cardinal memory.
Well, that's the thing I would say, Jane, is that, you know, I almost got teary-eyed last night. I really did, not because Yachty broke the record, but because I thought about being in that stadium and what that stadium would have felt like last night at that moment, and it would have been amazing for all of us, for all of Cardinal Nation, even the people at home listening on the radio, watching television, to have that stadium packed, because it would have been. We know that. Right. This is St. Louis. And that ovation going on for I don't know how many minutes would have been magical, and we get robbed of so many of those moments, unfortunately.
I agree. And Yachty deserves that as much as he's meant to this town. He deserves, you know, all of that and more. And I think people miss it. I really, really hope that we get the vaccine in order, because I think if we go another season without baseball, without hockey,
I think we'll
lose our minds here. I think it really shows how St. Louis is such a sports town because of what this means to us. And I don't care what you put on in St. Louis, we'll watch it. We love it.
Well, Gene, as you and I know, these two have lost their minds already many times in the past, but we'll leave it at that as we wrap up for a Friday afternoon. Rainford, we'll see you on the golf course. Jane, you're going to hang with me a couple minutes. We got to join the pregame. Gene Evans, great to have you on. As always, it's another Reardon Roundtable on a Friday afternoon. We'll take you into the pregame next after the news on KMOX. Hang in there.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 40% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 40% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.